Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, and welcome to a new edition of the CIO Confessions podcast, where I, Gert-Jan van Halem, your host, have a conversation with CIOs. We talk about experience, learnings, and views on the market and the role of the CIOs.
This is the CIO Confessions, a podcast by Deva Team.
Today, I'm very happy to have Adam Banks with me as a guest. He has led the IT of large organizations like Visa and Maersk, started the first ever fintech company, and is currently member of the board of 8 different companies. So it's an honor to be able to have a peek into all that experience that he brings along. Welcome, Adam. I'm very happy that you could find the time to record this podcast with me. Your experience is very valuable to our listeners. So thanks for being with me today. And maybe a short introduction of yourself to the listeners.
Certainly. Nice to be joining you. And I apologise in advance for my cold. So if my voice feels unusually deep, that's the reason why. As you mentioned, I'm a former CIO. Large global companies, typically, although I felt it was important to get a startup somewhere in the career. So got involved with startup. It wasn't startup at the end of the day. We got to Double Unicorn in London, so it was a big company at the end. Yeah. So I would say most of my experience is large corporate type environments. These days, board member and board advisor across 8 different businesses, deliberately different sectors and different phases of business. What I really like, and this had been a plan for my whole career actually, was to get into a space that had massive diversity. Mm-hmm. And when I look at my portfolio now, something as simple as the interest rate changes have a percentage of the portfolio rubbing their hands in glee because they're making money for the first time in a decade. Another percentage crying into their asset-filled environments because they've got huge amounts of debt related to the assets. And then a chunk in the middle that really don't care because what's driving their business is volatility, potentially, not necessarily interest rate change. So that really keeps me on my toes from a thinking perspective, because you just can't carry an answer from one business to the other. And I really enjoy that.
And how do you, because you could also, I hear some people that want to specialize and say, okay, I'm really good at this and bring me more of this because I'm really good at it, I know what I'm doing. Doesn't it make you too much of a generalist, or is that the strength to be a more generalist?
So I have autism, so I'd argue I'm really good at thinking.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking in a non-standard way.
Yeah.
And so as long as I'm in an environment that challenges me mentally and makes me think, I feel I'm doing the best I can do for societal contribution.
So your specialism is thinking?
Yes. Okay. I wouldn't. It was really interesting. I wasn't diagnosed until I was 50.
Yeah.
And throughout my career, I've had other areas of businesses come to me and before they went to the ExCo, they'd come and talk to me about the marketing plan.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd regularly say, well, why are you asking me? And they always said, oh, you think different. And I never connected it. You know, you'll give us a different perspective. And so that would be my specialism today, I think, thinking different, if you can be specialist in that.
Maybe a bit of sidestep if it's okay for you to discuss it, but does it change that it's diagnosed now, or is it just fine to know, but that's it?
For me, it's fine to know. I'm delighted it didn't get diagnosed earlier because I'm a lazy bugger. And I think I'd have used that as an excuse not to do a lot of stuff. I'm happy with a late diagnosis.
Great. So in all that work that you've done with the large companies, with the startups, a lot of it is about digital transformation, right? In the center of digital transformation. And I think your view on digital transformation might be a bit different than others, and it's a broad term anyway. So how would you define what digital transformation is?
So for me, the definition of what and why is the most important, because both of those words, digital and transformation, are massively overused at the present time and have been for the last 5 years or so. For me, and I'm not saying this is right, but for me, a digital transformation is about generating new sources of revenue for a business. Typically, when you work your way through the logic, to generate different sources of revenue, that business needs different capabilities.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it would be generating that revenue already today. To have the different capabilities, you usually need a different culture, different mindset to create the capabilities. And the unique aspect of digital is the customer intimacy. You can do a lot of transformational stuff, but when you throw in the digital bit, the core part of digital in most businesses is about getting much, much, much closer, if not integrated with their customer. And that level of intimacy drives whole new opportunities that if you've got the capabilities in place, you can execute upon to drive that revenue. Yeah.
But it's an interesting kind of almost digital and customer. That I don't think a lot of people connect these directly. Digital stack, customer is the commercial guy.
So I would argue what digital is not is better IT.
Yeah.
So when we look at the use of technology in your organization, if it is about enabling your people more, it's really IT.
Yeah.
And you're investing in better IT. If digital is not that, what is it?
Yeah.
And for me, the reason I throw in customer is that's an ecosystem. Mm-hmm. When you start looking at whether it's B2B or B2C, it doesn't matter. You're now in an ecosystem space. And an ecosystem means that nobody knows the right answer.
Mm-hmm.
It's the Henry Ford horse scenario.
Yeah.
Therefore, all of the tools and techniques that are typically viewed as digital, platforms, agility, product, all of those is around the ability to react and change direction. That is irrelevant if you're able to plan the future. If you can define the future, you generate a linear plan, you go there.
Yeah.
Therefore, I think it's almost a self-answering question. Digital has to be about an ecosystem. The ecosystem is typically customer-based.
Yeah.
And therefore, you are deploying tools. I hate the phrase new ways of working because A, they're not new, they're 20 years old. And B, they don't replace the other ways of working. Because any business is going to have stuff that it has to do that is linear,
yeah,
that they are the experts on, that there's no disruptor in the equation, and the disruptive ones where they're trying to explore their way to value with a customer base. So both have to be employed at the same time. And the moment you subscribe something as new, it implies the old is no longer in use.
Yeah.
So for me, digital's already defined itself that way.
Yeah.
It's just not as overt as it needs to be.
Yeah. But that gives also kind of tension because having the old ways and the new ways in one company.
There's a real debate here. And again, it's great to get to the answer as long as we have the right debate first.
Yeah.
So when you say it's a new way of working, you don't have a debate because new is better than old. Let's do new.
Yeah.
When you look at it and go, actually, 80% of our investment for the next 5 years is into our ecosystem.
Yeah.
It's into creating connectivity, creating empathy, starting to drive different sources of value. You would logically question whether it's worth having the other ways or whether you should do the other stuff using the digital techniques because it's easier just to have one way of doing it.
Yeah.
When it's 50-50, that's not a debate.
Yeah.
And so really understanding the direction and the levels of investment that you want in your business helps you answer the question.
Yeah.
What I see in most businesses is that they don't understand the core premise of digital, they don't have the debate, therefore they end up an answer that's not the right answer because it was subconscious rather than conscious.
Yeah, because you said before it's not an IT thing, digital.
Correct.
A lot of companies view it as an IT thing.
Mm-hmm.
They hire a CIO because we have to do digital transformation, you do that.
Yep.
What goes wrong if you do it like that?
Various. So the good CIOs, when they land, they very quickly start to make sure that everybody understands that they are a driver of digital, not the owner of digital.
Yeah.
And you start to see product behaviors being formed in other areas of the organization. I believe I can prove that digital is about 25% more expensive. So if you take Agile, it's about 25% more expensive and 20% slower than doing it in a traditional Prince-managed approach.
Yeah.
That's not what the board will say to start. Oh, we're going digital because it's quicker and it's cheaper and it's this and it. The moment you've started dispelling that myth, you get into a conversation, well, why are we doing digital then? And the answer is, well, because we need to be able to move with the market, we need to find our way to value with our customer. I remember, so the startup I referred to, we were the world's first mobile banking solution.
Mm-hmm.
When we put integration with Thumbprint, I'm going back to late 2010 sort of era, when the Thumbprint integration was added, our customers started checking their bank accounts 60 times a month.
Because of the ease of use.
Because of the ease of use. And it would be standing on a train platform, they'd just have a quick look. If you think about the advertising opportunity as a result of that, it's massive. Yet none of that was predicted.
No.
It was just a technical integration that we did when we... Yeah. And if you think about what that means for, let's say, marketing, marketing now needs to be getting customer insight on a daily basis. There's still companies out there that have an annual NPS survey.
Yeah.
Why would you invest in agility if you're only going to change course once a year?
Yeah.
And the CIOs that start having this dialogue start driving different thinking across the organization. And within a year, I'm thinking of one business I'm on the board of at the moment, we landed a new CIO 18 months ago. Already we're seeing various business areas standing up their own product organizations and expressing their desires in product centric fashion, which for me is as important, if not more important, than the technology, because you can outsource the technology, you can't outsource the product thinking.
Yeah. So then as a CIO, when you are brought in and say, okay, do digital transformation, what's the plan? Because even if you, in the worst case, you think, okay, let's do it, it's my problem, I will try to fix it. Mm-hmm. In the best case, you will say, I can't do it by myself, but I'm the CIO. They look at me at tech, sometimes even cost, minimize cost, and do the digital transformation.
Yep.
How do you go about it as a CIO?
So for me, very situational, but the first thing I would do is look at the organization I have, look at the potential value opportunity. Oh, sorry, when I say that, I mean the company I'm in, not my tech team.
Could
we, through the use of technology, massively increase our revenue or massively decrease our cost? Typically, the answer is in one or the other. If it's in neither, it's time to find a new company. Put your hands up and say there's no point being digital here because there's no value in it. I've never experienced not finding value. It is, to your point, one or the other. Whichever one it is, I would then construct a plan based on the capabilities that my technology team needed to have to maximize that value. So, for example, if the business is generally well served by technology, and we're not going to go into a state of disruption in an ecosystem play, I would be focused on quality of service, service delivery. How can we be the best operators in tech possible? Because that will drive down cost, remove inefficiency. There's a set of capabilities that you need to have. So in that instance, service management, incident management, problem management, that if you can invest in and get better at, the rest of the organization will feel the benefit.
Yeah.
Similarly, if the answer was external and it's about a value play, there's still a set of capabilities you choose to execute on. In that instance, it's going to be more software development, architecture, and sort of planning your product activities. Yeah. That, to me, is where you start to really double down. But back to not doing it in a silo, having defined that, I would be having a conversation across the exco, basically telling them what to measure me by. And it's really interesting. If you rock up to an exco, there, it's unlikely you've got other tech experts around that table.
Yeah.
So you're having a conversation on, here is what we have today as a business, not as a technology team. We operate, let's say, at 90% or 95% availability on some of our core services. That means that 5% of the time, our 120,000 person workforce is idle. Here's the direct cost of them being idle in terms of hours and salary.
Yeah.
Here's the indirect cost in terms of lost bookings, lost transactions, lost. I can fix that and take that to 99.9. It's going to cost me this much and it's going to take me that long. What you're really doing is coaching the rest of the exco on what success looks like for you.
Yeah.
And that then starts to create a momentum around how do we as a business go chase this. And so for me, it's applying your expertise, but in a way that's inclusive.
No.
Of the rest of the business, not exclusive to your tech team.
Yeah, and the examples that you give also require quite a good understanding of the business. It's not like the server will be down less. It's about what's the impact on the current invoicing, on the customer impact.
So for me, when I look at the board roles I have, when I join a board, the first conversation I want is with the CFO. Where does money come into this business and where does it go?
Yep.
Let's get an understanding of that. And then typically with the CCO, in terms of what percentage market share have we got? Basic question, is this about taking more share or is it about growing the overall market, as an example? Yeah. You're going to do very different things if you're trying to grow the market. When I go back to Visa, Visa at one point was 98% of electronic payment in Europe.
98?
There is no point in chasing the higher percentage of payments.
No.
What you need to do is get rid of cash. Yeah. That's where contactless came from.
Yeah.
So the low value tap and go, that's where that came from, because they recognised the competition wasn't MasterCard or Amex, it was cash.
Yeah.
And so just thinking about these things very structured and very logically, but not from an IT perspective, I think adds huge amounts of value.
Yeah. And it needs something else, I think, because yes, you have to understand quite deeply what this business is about, but also understand if that one server is down, what aspect of the business is hit?
Correct.
Because where do I use my tech capabilities to help that business? So you have to have a good understanding of how do I drive this business.
Correct. Which was why I listed service management as one of the things you'd invested in that space, because you need to understand the landscape, what business services it supports, the value of those services, and then modify your focus and spend accordingly.
And all too often, it's just a set of stuff that historically came together, and this is what we have, and business lines have their own stuff every now and then even as well, and we'll have to run it somehow.
Yep.
And I think I heard you mention before someday that enterprise architecture could play a role there.
Yes. So if we look at a business where value is the challenge, so typically if we're looking to create significantly more value, that usually involves significantly more spend. So rather than an efficiency play, this is now a how do we make sure our spend is correctly directed? I think it's quite important if you're entering a digital transformation that you end up with a fairly high percentage of software engineers in-house.
Yeah.
And the reason for that is cultural in the rest of the organization. Again, if you need all of this business knowledge, how are you going to get it if you outsource all of that?
Yeah.
Now, that's not to say you don't outsource some of it, you do. But you need a core chunk in-house that has the mix of tech and business knowledge. There's no point, though, just building stuff. I describe software engineering as the engine, but you equally need the controls around the engine to go somewhere. And enterprise architecture, when it's done properly, and by that I mean it's a non-technical function, is the sat-nav that leads you to the value along the way.
Yeah.
And starts to make the stuff you build reusable in multiple contexts, so it drives down overall spend and increases pace. So I see a lot of companies that, we're going to go digital, we're going to create our own development function.
Mm-hmm.
If the conversation stops there, you can guarantee you're looking at 18 months of spend increase and almost zero value increase over the same time period.
And a lot of nice software that the software engineers think is very nice.
Probably. Yeah, and not even nice software, because if you're starting from scratch, the chances are the outsourcers are way better than you.
Yeah.
So they're going to do better quality, better price point, yet you've just insourced all that, and you're not leveraging the benefit of the business knowledge on the insource.
Yeah.
IT Confessions Box. Every IT career has its challenges. In the Confessions Box, our guests share their lessons learned and resilience gained.
So, but that makes the CIO role quite a broad role. It's not always seen like that in companies. So how do you position yourself to be able to take that role?
So I think we're starting to see a bit of a change. One of the biggest concerns that boards have these days is that the CEOs that have served us well for the last 20 years cannot serve us into the future.
Mm.
And the logic behind that is the last 20 years have all been about growth.
Yeah.
So the CEOs have typically come from the sales side of the house.
Mm.
Given what's going on geopolitically, potential deconstruction of global trade, tariffs, economic fluctuations, the CEO's role is much more around survival. And so a deep understanding of the processes and the activities of the business, the cost base, becomes more and more important.
Yeah.
Yes, that's in the CFO, but it's equally in the CIO. But the more granular you want to get on what's our process, what's driving costs process by process, the closer you're getting to the CIO's world. So I think we're starting to see many businesses bring CIOs onto the board to help compensate for the lack of knowledge at an exec level.
Yeah.
I personally think we're going to start to see a number of CIOs move into COO roles, which has been true of banking for quite a while, but I think it's going to become more true across a number of businesses.
Yeah, I've heard banks saying we're an IT company with a banking license. Correct. I'm not sure if that's the right way to go about it, to be honest. But
well, I mean, when you look at banks and payment processes, what they've done primarily is centralize risk, and they make their money from managing risk. That risk used to be market risk.
Yeah.
It's increasingly operational risk because of the centralization that they've done. Yeah. When your banking was done on paper in branches, you had this massively resilient federated model.
Yeah. Yeah.
The only risk you had to manage was economic. Now we've got rid of the economic risk because we can, for example, tell whether you've got the money to make the payment you're trying to make in real time. On paper, you couldn't do that. Yeah. But you've swapped it rather than eliminated it for operating risk. Yeah. And so, to your point, there's a lot of banks that are technology data processing companies, and when they say they have a banking license, they have a small bit of risk management on the side.
Yeah,
that's the business holistically.
Yeah. So the role of the CEO will naturally change due to all kinds of factors on the economy and stuff like that, but maybe a new CEO is listening and think, oh, but I really want to do that digital transformation, but I just can't get on board at the exco. What's a good advice for them?
I'd argue if you can't get the exco on board, you're not having the right argument or making the right argument.
Okay.
So again, if we connect with value, and it's not true that every business should become digital. But in our fight for survival, we need to ask the question,
yeah,
are we better off, cost or value wise, by being more digital? And that's the question the CIO needs to be answering.
Yeah.
I used to see a lot of CIOs who said, well, I've got a technology strategy, but we don't have a business strategy, so it's, you know, not linked. Increasingly, I see CIOs who are saying that the business strategy does not give me the information I need to generate a technology strategy. So they write a business technology strategy, in essence.
Okay, yeah.
So it's nothing about how they're going to do stuff, it's about what.
Yeah.
So one of the companies I work with, the first line is, we believe the future value of technology to this company is the integration of IT and OT. And then it goes on to expand on how much money is spent in physical processing in that business,
yeah,
and how much,
yeah,
it could be reduced by. Lead times for creating certain things massively reduced because they're in an environment where they have to have air provided, forced air provided,
yeah,
to keep,
yeah,
humans alive. No humans means no air. No air saves them 3 months on every build. So they've, yeah, got a huge opportunity to accelerate.
Yeah.
And what the CIO did is put that on the table to provoke the debate. It doesn't matter to him whether that's true or not. It matters that the exco have had the conversation and decided, yeah, they're going left or right.
Yeah.
And so I would definitely encourage CIOs to find the right debate. But it is it's a what debate, not a how debate.
Yeah. And do you in general see that they are taken seriously in that? Because I also see companies where they just take care of the tech, make sure that the computer works, and don't bother us.
Are they taken seriously? The questions get taken seriously.
Yeah.
Particularly when you explain, because if we answer X, I'm diverting all the fund away from your laptops and desktops to do this, because,
yeah,
that's what's going to give the, yeah, business a future.
Yeah.
That starts to generate an interest, particularly if,
yeah,
your answer was wrong. And again, it doesn't matter whether it's wrong or it's right. The fact that you've put it on the table forces the debate.
Yeah. And so that's also, to put it a bit bluntly, don't whine about it, but find the right debate.
Yes.
Yeah. And earlier, I also, we were here at the CIO Forum and you gave a talk there as well. And you went into the management versus leadership
mm-hmm.
thing. And I think with a broad role like this, we tend to think about leadership.
Yep.
But I had the idea that you see them both as valuable, but use them in the right moment, maybe?
Yeah.
How do you...
So you're going to get me on one of my hot buttons.
Huh?
One of my biggest frustrations in my working career has been when HR describes someone as a leader, meaning they have people. That is, leadership is not something that comes with role. Leadership is something that is a facet of the person in the role. And so when you start to manage people, you need good management skills.
Yeah.
What I find particularly in asset-centric businesses is there's a lot of good management skills, because even in their first job, if you think about being in a bank, you're probably not managing anything until job 3 or 4.
Mm-hmm.
And that would be a small team or...
Yeah. Yeah.
If you're in a physical business, like let's say water or gas distribution, your first job is managing a pumping station.
Yeah.
You're the only one there, but you're managing the equipment and making sure. So you develop these management skills that, to be honest, you overly rely on throughout your career, because you get so good at management that every nail you see gets hit by the hammer you've got. The opposite is true in virtual businesses. So if you take a business that doesn't have a physical product, they have a huge depth of leadership competencies, but the people are usually fairly badly managed.
Yeah.
And so if you look at Google, they've gone pretty much down a self-managing model.
Yeah.
And that will be directly as a result of their situation, not a specific desire. I believe the most effective model is when somebody has developed both muscles, a management muscle and a leadership muscle. And then you can situationally use whichever is most appropriate. Lots of books and stuff on which qualifies one or the other. Again, for me, simplistically, if you are in management, problem flows up and answers flow down.
Yeah.
If you are in leadership, context flows down and answers flow up. So you as the leader are providing the context, the challenge, the support, and the people around you are solving the problems that move the organisation forwards.
Yeah.
It is entirely possible, even in one meeting, to have both, as long as you're highly conscious and you're identifying it for the people around you. I'm going to have to step into the management space here, because I think we've got sufficient disagreement around the table that someone needs to make a call. So here is the answer I think we need to be working on. That starts to educate those around you on when you're dropping in and out. The objective, certainly in large organisations, has to be that the majority of the senior contribution is a leadership one.
Yeah. I mean, that's interesting, because I think most of the people would say, okay, give me that leadership, because I don't want to provide all the answers. I'm a busy guy and they all come to my desk, and if I just can give them context and then the answers will come, that would be kind of paradise. But still, you said, but you need both.
So they do say that, and then they get scared at lack of control. So there's this almost, how can you... There are a set of leadership controls and tools, and there are a set of management controls and tools. And what you tend to see is people saying, oh, yes, I don't want to be at the centre of everything. I want to... But by the way, I'm having one-to-ones with everyone on a weekly basis, and I'm doing all that. That's basically the spider in the middle of the web pulling the strings.
Yeah.
That's a management approach.
Yeah.
So for me, again, when if you are taking a majority of leadership approach, to provide context to everybody else, you need to find context. So all of your work in that role is upward and outward. Yeah. Maybe outward from the company, as in into the ecosystem and into the... That means you can't even look at what's going on behind you with your DRs. They're doing stuff, and you need to be the researcher that distills the context and then provides the context to them so they can be effective. That makes it impossible. You'd be spinning on the spot to do that and look outwards and then be the one that has the right answer inwards when there's an inward problem found.
Yeah.
So I spend a lot of time coaching. I used to spend a lot of time coaching my direct reports into that leadership space, such that they felt empowered to be able to do that for their teams. And at the end of the day, we have to accept the best answer comes from the wisdom of the crowd.
Yeah.
And the crowd is not in the room when the decision is made. Therefore, don't make the decision in the room. Set the context in the room and let that permeate the organisation. And then one of your really bright sparks somewhere will come up with a wonderful solution that flows its way back up, and you get to hear about it for endorsement, not decision.
But then, you've given talks and given interviews on the incident that happened at Maersk with the ransomware story, 2017, I think.
Correct.
So then you're in all of a sudden in a crisis, and then kind of the natural thing is, I need an answer now. Go give it then. I don't have time to let stuff flow. I need something now.
Yep. So. Again, another leadership principle is leaders create clarity. What most people want is certainty. Leaders cannot create certainty. They can only create clarity. For example, during that attack, someone came to me and said, I need to know this answer. I said, well, I can't tell you that answer. And I probably can't tell you that answer for 3 days. that you now have absolute clarity, you're not getting an answer, deal with it and get on with your job. Now, they found a way to make it work without that answer. I could never have told them how to make it work without that answer because I'm not an expert in their space.
And they don't waste any time in finding the answer. They know they won't get it.
Yeah, that answer does not exist.
No.
and so that you can create urgency with leadership in the same way you can with management. Management is usually an easier shortcut.
Yeah.
And there were times during the crisis where I had to leverage management skills as an accelerator.
Yeah.
Equally, every time I did that, you are incurring some risk that the decision is wrong because it's not being made by the right person.
Yeah.
So there were certain things where I would let the problem percolate, for want of a better description, rather than give them the easy solution.
Yeah.
And that was because it was such an important thing that we had to get it right.
Yeah.
I remember one of my DRs in Maersk, not during the crisis, but one of my DRs said to me when I was... When I created my function, there was a lot of managers learning leadership skills. And one of my direct reports said to me, I don't understand why we're having this conversation. It's obvious you know the answer. Why don't you just tell us? I'd been in the company 2 years. Two of the people around that table had been in the company over 40 years.
Yeah.
And so my reply was, well, do you honestly think I know the answer when between... you lot, you've got 100 years experience in this company, and I have two. I know there are five possible answers to this question. I just want to make sure you've talked about all five before you've decided which is the best one.
Yeah.
And if you only talk about three, I will inject with what about and what about.
Yeah.
And that, to me, is the leadership value I can add.
Yeah.
It's very different to a management value.
But it's even in a moment of crisis when everybody's on your neck as well. Don't do it. Let it flow.
So my record was 17 minutes. I put the question on the table, and I had to wait 17 minutes before someone spoke.
Yeah, and I can imagine it's also kind of a trap, because if you start giving answers, people will expect answers.
Correct.
And you get into a circle that you probably don't want to be in.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard to get out of and say, okay. Yeah.
Well, at the end of the day, none of us can be experts in everything.
No.
And so this whole dependency culture that people quite like, because it means they're not taking risk.
Yeah.
Risk is offloaded to somebody else.
Yeah.
It is a really negative business tension, and in my opinion, drives suboptimal performance.
Yeah. Very interesting. I think we went from digital transformation through, okay, as a CEO, what should you do there? And how do you do it as a leader or a manager? Very interesting insights. Not sure if you have any finishing words maybe for our listeners.
Yeah, so every business I've been in, the IT team, the finance team, the risk team, are hugely intelligent. I mean, IQ's right up there.
Yeah.
When you compare them to someone like sales or marketing, sales and marketing have a much higher EQ. And there's some truism in it's not what you know, it's who you know.
Mm.
The good news for technologists is, whilst it's almost impossible to develop IQ, it's not impossible, but it's close to impossible, it's actually highly effective and quite easy to develop EQ.
Mm.
And so, personally, I mean, if I look at my direct reports in the last two or three businesses I've run, 99% of the development budget has gone on EQ and people skills, zero, to all intents and purposes, has gone on technical skills. And that's true probably for the first three layers of my organization, top three layers.
Yeah.
So I would say focus on the EQ, the ability to relate, the ability to understand the organizational dynamic, and you get loads more done.
Great advice to finish up with. Thank you so much for your time again. And for all of you out there, thank you for listening, and hopefully you'll join us the next time again. See you soon.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Discover other podcasts on devateam.com/podcast. Devateam, AI-driven tech consulting.